Day 7 of the World Cup started for me with a run and some housework. While doing these things, I listened to the MLS Extra Time podcast, which recapped the U.S.-Ghana game and looked ahead to U.S.-Portugal. The biggest item of discussion was who would replace Altidore. I also listened to some recent dummy podcasts. The first was about Garrincha, well worth checking out, as well as the ESPN 30 for 30 episode about the player. The next episode looked at the World Cup. David Goldblatt spoke about the FIFA Congress and how Blatter manages the proceedings to the point where leaders, albeit from smaller countries, step up to the mic, back Blatter, and vote down measures that will limit his and the executive committee's power. Gabriel Marcotti echoed this in a recent post for ESPN FC, quoting from his article, "To understand it, you need to put yourself in the shoes of the vast majority of FIFA member nations. Most are small, relatively poor, and for the majority of their existence have watched as the traditional powers, most of them European, hog the decision-making. They credit Blatter for changing the status quo. He pushed to allow more African, Asian, and CONCACAF teams into the World Cup. He set about increasing FIFA's revenues dramatically, and then took that money, more than $5 billion over a three-year cycle from 2015 to 2018, and redistributed it around the world. Indeed, according to a FIFA study, every single day they give away more than $500,000 in development cash that goes to build pitches and provide coaching and equipment to various countries around the globe." Interesting thoughts from Marcotti. On to the football. The first game of the day was Holland-Australia. Before the game, I read Alex Baker's preview about the game. He identified Cahill as a key man for the Aussies and noted their physical style against the technical ability of the Dutch. As for the Dutch, they would stay with a 3-5-2 and keep riding Robin, RVP, and Schneider. I went to Pepino's to watch the game with Nick Binder. Arcadia Whitson was my drink for this match, and the Dutch struggled out of the blocks, but out of nowhere Robin dribbled half the field and slotted home. I opened my computer to jot down some notes, and Binder said, "Oh my god." Looking up, I saw Kleischen picking the ball out of his net. What a goal by Cahill, contender for goal of the tournament, and it was back to square one. With the goal, Australia started to believe, and I tried to figure out what the Aussies were doing, if anything. Was Holland just not sharp? I asked Sam Thompson on Twitter at halftime his thoughts, and he said that there's no doubting that Netherlands had been poor, but it was because Australia simply weren't giving them time and space to play. They were working incredibly hard off the ball and pressing Netherlands, and were very bright in wide attacking areas. On the injury front, the injury to Martin Zinni didn't look that bad at first, but he was carted off with a protective device around his head. I haven't found any confirmation of the injury yet. 10 minutes into the half, the soccer world stopped again. Bozovic whipped in a cross that hit Dutch defender Jan Maat on the arm. The referee points to the spot, and suddenly the Socceroos were up 2-1. Minutes later, RVP took off his invisibility cloak to equalize as the Aussies held him onside. The Dutch went with more of a 4-3-3 in the second half, with Memphis Depay on the left-hand side, and he cut in, scored a wonderful goal halfway through the second period. The strike had some wicked swerve, but the Aussie defense should have closed him, and the goalie really should have done better. This came after a wonderful chance for Lecky to be the hero, but he decided to chest it towards goal instead of heading it. All credit to Australia. The Socceroos were drawn in another tough group, and they gave good account of themselves, but they are out of the tournament. And major props to the referee, who is one of the first I've seen so far be able to draw a straight line with the foam can. Game 2 was the Battle of La Rojas. Xavi and Pique were dropped in favor of Javi Martinez and Pedro, and Valdivia did not start for Chile. Nervy start does not even begin to describe what happened to Spain at the beginning of the game, and they were lucky not to go down early after several Chilean chances. Spain started zipping the ball around, but it was a Chilean turnover that led to their first real chance, with Bravo staying strong and denying the Spanish. It was a turnover from Spain, however, that was the most costly. Xabi Alonso gave it away, and Spain appeared to have it covered, but a back heel later, and Chile was bearing in on goal. Arangues squared to Vargas, who held his nerve as Casillas slid by him to slot home. The energy and pressure of Chile was a sight to behold. Spain struggled to move through the gears because the South Americans simply wouldn't let them. Every pass was challenged, and each time a player received the ball, they were immediately set upon. Halftime approached, and Xabi Alonso, Arriola yellow card, clipped Sanchez, who stepped up and hit a free kick. Casillas made the same mistake that several keepers have done this tournament, punching the ball back into the middle, and Arangues toe-poked the ball in, putting Chile up 2-0 and putting the end to an error. Koke came off for Xabi Alonso at halftime. Alonso was well off the pace. Turnovers, a lack of defensive pressure, several shots not troubling the Chilean goalkeeper, not his best performance. Again, Spain started to gain a little momentum, but Diego Costa couldn't quite find the goal, which infected Busquets, who missed a sitter just minutes into the half. Spain continued to turn the screw, but very little finished product. On the hour mark, El Nino subbed in for Diego Costa. Really brings into focus Costa's contribution to this team. Change in style, but didn't deliver. Plus, was he 100% fit? There was a moment right before he came off where he attempted to do what he'd done so many times for Athletic this year: take the ball and carry the attack to the opponents by himself. Two dribbles in, a toe poke from Chile, and the moment was over. He was a one-man battering ram for the Spanish champions, but a virtual non-factor towards the end of the league season and in this tournament. I don't want to say I told you so, but I rarely get to. I told you Spain wouldn't get out of the group. As time ticked away, I remembered the successes: the run through Euro 2008, capped off by Torres' wonderful goal against Germany, and the 2010 World Cup with those grueling 1-0 wins before Iniesta's sensational winner, and 2 summers ago when the team again won by the narrowest of margins before destroying Italy in the final. Time will tell if the next generation will have the success of this group. All good things must come to an end, and it's time to turn the page for La Roja. Heading into the nightcap, there was some doubt if Etu would play for Cameroon against Croatia, with reports they were still battling a knee injury. He did not start, and there were several changes for Cameroon as Matip and Abubakar started. For Croatia, Kovacevic was dropped and Samir introduced. I asked the website Croatian Soccer Report what I should know about Samir. Response: pray to God that he doesn't make a mistake. Not a ringing endorsement. Went to Leo's and was kind of weird watching a game with Motown Soul and Country and whatever else as the background. As the game kicked off, the penalty area in Manaus looked a little chopped up. Speaking of choppy, the opening 10 minutes were not great, but then Serna got on the ball, whipped in a cross, which Cameroon did not deal with. Perisic squared the ball for Olic to put home. Cameroon looked to get the ball wide, especially down the right-hand side. Not sure if they were targeting Pranić, but they were definitely giving him the once-over. Fouling and rolling over seemed to be the main focus of the first half, and Kovac made a small change 15 minutes before the half, switching Olic and Perisic. 5 minutes before the interval, a comical collision between two Cameroon attackers led to Perisic running up the left-hand channel. Off the ball, Alex Song lashed out at Mandzukic and was shown a straight red. Real lack of composure and leadership there, and the Indomitable Lions were up against it. For a time, Cameroon was fired up after the card, and they created several chances before the ref blew the halftime whistle. Halftime saw the return of number 5 Nunkio for Cameroon. He struggled against Mexico, so I couldn't imagine how he'd perform on a squad man down. I didn't have to wait long for the answer. A poor clearance from Intanje was intercepted by Perisic, who pulled away from number 5 and slammed past the goalkeeper. Two up and a man up. I got the fork ready for Cameroon. The rest of the game was a training session for Croatia as the Vetrini created chance after chance, scoring some, missing others. Eduardo, Kovacevic, and Rebic got some time on the field before the final whistle was blown. Croatia 4, Cameroon 0. Cameroon is out of the competition and will hope to avoid heavy defeat at the hands of Brazil. Croatia plays Mexico, with Mexico only needing a draw to advance. That game should be a chippy, nervy affair as both teams seek to progress. Today sees a couple of key games: Colombia versus Ivory Coast, Uruguay versus England, and Japan versus Greece. Colombia and Ivory Coast will be looking to put themselves in position to advance, while Uruguay and England will be fighting for their World Cup lives. Same thing goes for the last game of Japan-Greece. Both need 3 points to give themselves something to play for on the last match day. Okay, another day has come and gone. Another day of matches ahead of us. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Ta-ta!